It's Friday, October 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, U.S. presidential candidates spar in their final debate before Election Day.
And they give rise to some sort of low-level, not necessarily peace itself, but low-level stability.
Will another ceasefire in Yemen finally lead to calm? Also ahead, Iraqi forces and their allies close in on Islamic State in Mosul. Photography looks closely at the intricacies of bird feathers. It's all on today's International Edition. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump refused to promise he will accept the results of the U.S. election in his third and final debate with Democrat Hillary Clinton on Wednesday. The two White House hopefuls also clashed over Russia, immigration, and appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court in the debate that was held in Las Vegas, Nevada. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has a wrap-up of the third debate from Washington.
For the second straight debate, there was no handshake between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in their final face-off. Perhaps the most significant moment came when Trump was pressed by moderator Chris Wallace about his repeated claims that the U.S. election process is rigged against him.
That you will absolutely accept the result of this election.
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters.
Clinton said she found Trump's response horrifying and said it ran counter to U.S. political tradition.
He is denigrating, he's talking down our democracy, and I, for one, am appalled that somebody who is the nominee of one of our two major parties would take that kind of position.
Trump and Clinton also clashed over whether Russia is trying to influence the election process through cyber attacks, which U.S. intelligence officials believe is the case.
Finally, will Donald Trump admit and condemn that the Russians are doing this and make it clear that he will not have the help of Putin in this election, that he rejects Russian espionage against Americans, which he actually encouraged in the past.
When pressed, Trump said he would, of course, condemn Russia for the activity if it was true. But he also said China or others could be behind the cyber attacks.
I don't know Putin. He said nice things about me. If we got along well, that would be good. If Russia and the United States got along well and went after ISIS, that would be good. He has no respect for her. He has no respect for our president.
Trump was also on the defensive over allegations from at least nine women who say he groped them sexually.
Well, first of all, those stories have been largely debunked. Those people, I don't know those people. I have a feeling how they came. I believe it was her campaign that did it.
Clinton sought to defend those making the allegations.
You know, Donald thinks belittling women makes him bigger. He goes after their dignity, their self-worth, and I don't think there is a woman anywhere who doesn't know what that feels like.
The candidates also offered different views on Supreme Court appointments, abortion, and immigration when Trump again called for a border wall. But Clinton said he would rip families apart. With Hillary Clinton now holding an expanded lead of about 7 percentage points, early voting is underway in more than 30 states. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
For weeks, Mr. Trump has repeatedly asserted the election is rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton. On Thursday, at a campaign stop, he said that he will accept the results of the November 8th election if he wins. Mark Rozelle is the dean of the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University and commented to VOA on Mr. Trump's statements about acknowledging the legitimacy of the election process.
It's not only unique for a presidential nominee of a major party to say that he may not accept the legitimacy of the outcome. It's absolutely unprecedented in American presidential history. So a lot of people are very concerned about that, but I would just caution to those who worry that somehow this is going to have some long-standing effect on the American political process that this is not for Donald Trump to decide. It's for the Electoral College to decide. And once the Electoral College certifies that either he or Hillary Clinton has won the presidency, that's it. And the loser can say, I congratulate my opponent, or refuse to do so and say the election was not legitimate. But the loser really doesn't have any say in the outcome. So you can see right now many major figures in the Republican Party are condemning what Mr. Trump said in the debate. And they're making it very clear that our electoral democracy stands strong and the winner is accorded legitimacy and we unite behind the president after the election's over. That's the way things work. So I think Mr. Trump at a certain point will just become an angry outlier and most people in the political system will simply ignore him at that point.
Mark Roussel, the dean of the Schar School of Policy and Government at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. It's time for us now to find out what people are saying on social media about the debate. VOA's G. Abby Lee has been following the comments. She joins me in the studio with the latest.
Hi, Jim.
I'm sure there's a lot of buzz about last night's debate.
That's right. Online users are loving the last night's moderator, Chris Wallace. Many people said the Fox News anchor did the best job out of all the other moderators this year. People are tweeting he did well on fact-checking and controlling the crowd.
Mm-hmm. He was gutsy about his role as a moderator.
Yeah, so even at one point he said, Mr. Trump, I'm not a potted plant here. I get to ask questions. And he did. And a lot of people tweeted that comment. But Wallace was also the one who told people to settle down when the crowd started laughing when Trump said, nobody respects women more than me.
Well, speaking of that, people are also talking about his nasty woman comment.
Oh, my goodness. So Twitter definitely had a great time with that one. Towards the end of the debate, Trump called Clinton a nasty woman while she was speaking, which some people thought is not a presidential remark. And women's editor at Huffington Post, Elena Vagianos, tweeted this. You know what a hashtag nasty woman is good at? Voting. But Trump supporters, of course, are saying that, yeah, she is in fact a nasty woman getting money from countries that do not support gays and lesbians. Hashtag nasty woman is also a trending hashtag, and some feminists are saying they want to be a quote-unquote nasty woman for Halloween.
Well, we'll see what sort of costumes they need for that. What else is trending?
Jim, there's also a chance for free money. So it happens that we are in one of the 10 cities where we can go look for lucky pennies. And that's a promotion by Ally Bank, which launched a campaign to raise appreciation for the lowest value coin by hiding special coins worth $1,000 throughout the country. They're described as slightly bigger than actual pennies, and the 10 cities include Detroit, Miami, and Washington, D.C. And the faux pennies are apparently located in plain sight in public places, so keep your eyes peeled.
So like finding a penny on the ground or something like that. So how do people find them?
That's a big draw for Ally. The bank will post hints about the lucky penny's locations on its Twitter, so if you want to find these special coins, you better follow them at Ally. This is like a really big opportunity for them to strengthen their social media presence. Jim, back to you.
Well, thank you for the analysis, G. And you may follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. I'm at VOA Stevenson, and G. Abby Lee's stream is quite easy to find. It's at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, Philippines President Duterte announces Philippines' separation from the United States. U.S. Defense Secretary strongly condemns failed North Korean missile launch. The United Nations says that investing in girls plays a huge economic development dividend. Activists demand freedom for pizza, the world's saddest polar bear living in China, and hot dog in Malaysia, okay by any other name. You'll find these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and through your smartphone by using the VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. A UN-brokered 72-hour ceasefire went into effect shortly before midnight Wednesday. It's the sixth time that the international community has attempted to end the 19-month conflict that has killed thousands of civilians and displaced millions since Shiite Houthi rebels, backed by units loyal to former President Ali Abdullah Saleh, swept across the impoverished Arabian country of Yemen in 2014. Regional analyst Zubair Iqbal, a senior fellow at the Washington-based Middle East Institute, tells VOA's Victor Beatty this truce may be different for two reasons, the first being the international outrage that followed a Saudi-led coalition airstrike on a funeral in Sana'a earlier this month that killed 140 people.
I think these Saudis were actually quite surprised and quite shocked by what happened. They really didn't think that it was going to be this big an issue. And the second thing is that in the region itself, increased focus on Iraq and the unwinding of everything that could have gone right in Syria has created a situation where Yemenis, the Houthis, could very well be thinking in terms of cutting their losses, while the Iranians are finding themselves in a situation where they don't want to go overboard at this moment, given their involvement in Syria and their role in the anti-ISIS process in Mosul. So I think this time it could very well drag on at least for some time and may give rise to some sort of low-level, not necessarily peace itself, but low-level stability of, I would say, some sort of ceasefire. But it's very difficult to explain what kind of ceasefire it would be.
72 hours is not very much time for a humanitarian pause, if you will. How likely do you think, you mentioned it earlier, but how likely do you think an extension will follow?
I think there is a possibility of extension. I would give it a 50% chance.
And what about a resumption of peace talks that were held in Kuwait?
That is a very different matter. As far as I understand, both the Omanis and the Kuwaitis are trying to push it and see if something can be worked out. Saudis have taken a position of no change in their stance, but typically in the case of Saudi Arabia, when they say no change in their stance, basically it means that they're exploring and thinking, but not necessarily reach the stage where they can make a decision.
Well, a UN humanitarian aid official said that the pause in fighting is a welcome first step, but urged a longer-term access. He referred to Yemen's economy as having all but collapsed.
Oh, yes.
The key port is damaged. That hinders delivery of food, goods, and aid. Only about half the hospitals are even partially operating.
Yemen's economy was a very fragile economy. It was, to a large extent, two separate economies, the urban and the rural. And the urban economy basically has effectively collapsed. As far as remittance flows that used to take place from Saudi Arabia and from the UAE to Yemenis have by and large stopped. And so we have a situation on our hands where they do not have access to food and medicine, and at the same time they do not have the ability to buy it either.
Zubair Iqbal adds, however the conflict ends, a large percentage of the younger generation is growing up malnourished, stunted in growth, and lacking in education. Iraqi government and Kurdish Peshmerga forces say they are within 25 kilometers of the Islamic State stronghold of Mosul, 3 days into an operation seen as crucial in defeating the terror group. As Henry Ridgewell reports, the closer the Iraqi and coalition forces get to the city, the more difficult the fighting is likely to become and the more dangerous for the millions of civilians trapped in the city.
يقول الله سبحانه وتعالى الذين قال لهم الناس.
Islamic State released a propaganda video Wednesday purporting to show its fighters defiantly patrolling the streets of Mosul. An unidentified militant addresses the camera, warning that the United States will be defeated in Iraq. Despite the rhetoric, Islamic State fighters are rapidly losing ground. Backed by coalition artillery and airstrikes, Iraqi and Kurdish Peshmerga forces say they are ahead of schedule in their mission to retake Mosul. Iraqi Army spokesman Brigadier Yahya Rasul described the conditions they are facing. He said there have been more than 20 suicide cars trying to target army vehicles during the advance, but they were all destroyed. More than 100 U.S. troops are embedded with Iraqi and Peshmerga forces behind the front lines. International coalition jets are targeting Islamic State positions in Mosul. Local residents have told of reports of fighters forcing civilians into buildings they believe are likely to be targeted. 1.5 million civilians are thought to be living in Mosul. Many are expected to flee, presenting an opportunity for Islamic State fighters to escape. Visiting fellow Afzal Ashraf of the University of Nottingham Centre for Conflict, Security and Terrorism.
Daesh will use the human exodus. They will use other means of disguising themselves, and I believe they've already begun to leave the city.
That could allow Islamic State fighters in Mosul to regroup in Syria, neighbouring countries or Europe. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Much more on this story can be found at our website, voanews.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and check out our Facebook page if you haven't already. It's VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. Feathers are the most distinctive features of birds. They vary in shape, size, and structure, and they have different functions as well, from protection, insulation, and camouflage to sexual attraction and flight. Besides all of that, feathers are rich in color and beauty. And that's what National Geographic photographer Robert Clark has captured in his new book. VOA's Faiza El-Masri has more as Faith Lapidus narrates.
Taking pictures of feathers was a dream assignment for photographer Robert Clark, who loves nature and finds beauty in birds.
I got the assignment from the National Geographic, so it started out as a magazine article. And we were lucky. We were working with some scientists, and we went to China and shot a lot of the fossil evidence of feathers, which takes the origin of feathers way back in time to, you know, 160 million years old or so. And we went to feather collections around the world. I also made some visits to different zoos around the United States. We spent a lot of time in taxidermy shops, so I was able to shoot some of the things that were extinct, like passenger pigeons and Carolina parakeets.
These photographic journeys took around a year and resulted in a new book, Feathers, Displays of Brilliant Plumage. Along with dozens of bold, eye-popping images, Clark includes information that many people may not know about feathers.
One thing people don't understand and realize, and I was a little bit aware of this, but I learned it in much greater detail, is something called structural color. When you look at a feather from different angles, it has an iridescence to it, and, you know, peacock feathers is a great example to where it'll go blue to green to kind of a purple color. The color is built to the design and to the shape of the feather, and the reason it looks different is that the light goes through it, and then the light is bent. It's not just reflected, so the light is bent and comes out a little bit different direction. So it creates this iridescence, and there's a lot of reasons for it, sexual attraction and camouflage and different things like that.
Portraits in the book, and they are portraits, illustrate the diversity in feathers' shape and function. The southern cassowary, for example, can't fly, so its coarse, hair-like feathers serve mostly as insulation and protection. That's not the case for the lesser snow goose.
I think my favorite is the lesser snow goose, which is a pretty large wing. It's a migratory bird, and it's a high flyer, so it has these very aerodynamic wings, It has a uvula coming off of it. It's kind of like a thumb on the top part of it. And I think it's just compositionally, I think it's a beautiful, beautiful wing. Not very colorful, but it certainly is a nicely composed wing.
Other birds' feathers are designed to attract mates.
The great Argus is a bird that's kind of drab in color, but then it lifts its wing up and it's got this multicolored pattern, blue and yellow and little speckles all over it.
For a slow look at some of the feathers Robert Clark photographed, visit his website, robertclark.com. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us at our home, voanews.com, where we invite you to stop by often in the next, well, less than 20 days before the election for our next U.S. president. You'll find all of the latest developments and news at voanews.com, plus a whole lot more. Also, check us out on Facebook at VOA Now, and be sure to follow our Twitter stream. That address again, at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter. Our engineer is Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for taking part of your day to join us. Have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has responded to a series of missile attacks aimed at U.S. Navy ships sailing in international waters off the coast of Yemen. Missiles from an area in Yemen controlled by Houthi rebels were launched toward these ships on October 9th, 12th, and 15th. On October 13th, the U.S. targeted three radar sites along the coast and sent cruise missiles from the U.S. destroyer Nitze to degrade the ability of the sites to track and target ships in the future. Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook said the U.S. strikes were a matter of self-defense, a response to threats to our vessels and to freedom of navigation, which is a core U.S. national security interest.
More than 4 million barrels of oil a day pass through the Bab el-Mandeb. This narrow passage is a vital link connecting Asia and Europe. Safe navigation through the strait is vitally important to economies in the region and to global commerce.
The current military conflict in Yemen started in March 2015 when rebels from the minority Houthi community, backed by Iran, took over large swaths of territory and forced the elected president, Abed Mansour Hadi, to flee the country. At the request of President Hadi, a Saudi Arabian-led military coalition began airstrikes against Houthi positions. The U.S. has been aiding the coalition with intelligence and logistical support, but has also expressed serious concern over the loss of civilian life, including the recent airstrike on a funeral in Yemen that killed more than 140 mourners and wounded hundreds more. U.N. Special Envoy Ismail Old Sheikh Ahmed announced earlier this week a cessation of hostilities agreed by all sides, which will de-escalate tensions and lead to a resumption of negotiations that could bring an end to the fighting. At the Pentagon, Press Secretary Cook added that those who might threaten U.S. forces should recognize that we will not tolerate threats to our people. We will respond if our forces come under fire. We have taken swift action in this case, and should we see a repeat, we will be prepared to take appropriate action again at the appropriate time.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.